Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Georgia Wrestling Now, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on the local scene in Georgia and around the Southeast region, as well as interviews with the newsmakers. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Georgia Wrestling Now.
Welcome to another special Tuesday edition of Georgia Wrestling Now. If Danny only were on the line, I would let him do his special Ed impression, but he's not here yet. So, here he is. Danny only.
Yay, special Tuesday! Sorry, bro. I'm a little bit behind schedule. It's been kind of a crazy week. I got my kid with me for spring break, and things aren't exactly on the up and up as far as punctuality, but I'm here, damn it.
Hey, you're right on time. So we've got a big show. We're being joined already by your Hate Junkies tag team partner, the Lethal Dose Strychnine, and, of course, Team All You Can Eat's Matt Hankins, and I myself am Jonathan Williams from WrestlingWithPopCulture.com. I just got news that a couple of our scheduled guests will not be calling in tonight, because the Universal Championship Wrestling show that was scheduled for this Friday at Hiram High School has been rescheduled by the high school. They're doing some other event, so they rescheduled it for sometime in May. So Matt Hardy, I guess, we'll try to get him again next month. But we do have Strychnine, and we will have what's his nickname? The Hardcore Giant. Rod Niemi.
How do you? Ronald A. Niemi the Fourth.
Right. So he'll be calling in a little bit later. I'm not all that familiar with him because he's from Florida, but I did see him at Academy Theater once with the Tokyo Monster Cahagas, or however it's pronounced. I don't remember if you were there, Danny. Were you part of that show?
I was. I believe that's the night I might have wrestled Kyle Matthews. I'm not sure though.
Oh, yeah, that does sound about right. And I remember there were a lot of big matches. But anyway, he was part of Deep South Wrestling when it was a WWE developmental territory down in McDonough, and he's done a lot of stuff in Florida, and I guess he's got a lot of other stuff going on in Florida in the near future. Let's see. I guess we need to start off with last weekend's events. Friday night was another crazy night for Empire Wrestling at Academy Theater. Danny was not there, but Matt and I were there. What was your impression of that show?
crazy as usual.
Crazier than usual, I would say.
It did end outside of the ring, outside of the area where we usually are, and it ended appropriately enough there for me on the concession stand, so I was all in favor of that. No food was harmed in the match.
There was some food harmed.
I didn't get a good vantage point. There was a rush to there, so I just kind of laid back. I was just waiting for the electric slide, which, oddly enough, I'm always waiting for the electric slide, and this week I got my wish.
Yeah, that was different. So for people who were not there, the main event was De La Vega against the man formerly known as Oscar Worthy, who now simply goes by O-Dub. And it was a Falls Count Anywhere match that ended up in the lobby, and several bottles of beer and wine were knocked over and shattered. And then, for some reason, after De La Vega got the pin, if I remember correctly, and then who was it, Johnny Danger, that turned on the music?
It was Johnny Danger, and oddly enough, he went with Not Rock, which was a shot, so he gave the people what they wanted.
So, PCW and Empire wrestlers, as well as fans, broke out into the electric slide to conclude the evening. And then Saturday, I thought I was going to see you at their Porterdale show, Matt.
I made the trip north. I went the other way.
You went to TNT.
TNT show.
Yeah, I heard that was a great show. Of course, Strychnine was part of that. And sounds like, from what he's told me already, that he had a great match, but unfortunately not only lost the tag team titles, but also the Hate Junkies can no longer appear as the Hate Junkies in TNT Pro Wrestling. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Strict 9?
All right. So the stipulation, the old dealio, was this guy, Ryan Bonebreak, in his the asylum or his charges. And, you know, we are sick of them being around. They want to be the top dogs. So they challenged us. We laid the loser leave town stipulation. And what ended up happening was, you know, Danny couldn't be there. And so I had to pick a ringer as my partner. And my choices were either to go in it alone or, you know, pick somebody else. And one of the guys, there's Chad Silva and freaking, what is his name?
Zachary Blaine.
Yeah, are the Asylum. And Chad Silva's, I'm understanding it's his brother, a guy named Alex Decker. He seemed like the right choice to be my assistant, as he has an issue with Mr. Silva himself. The match, I mean, it was, man, the match was probably the best those two have ever had. In complete reality, the TNT show, there were more people there than I'd ever seen in that building, and it was a live crowd. I mean, they were behind, you know, me and us, you know, 100%, but I mean, I went down swinging. I took a couple really big moves and you know, kicked out and kind of didn't have much left. So my last act of defiance, I entered a emptied my nasal cavities on the Enterprise. I just blew the biggest snot rocket I could muster. They hit me with their tag move, and that was it, unfortunately. So the Hate Junkies are gone from TNT, and as well as our title reign that began in September, I think, is over. So,
Shit.
So, Danny, I understand you were wrestling in South Carolina, and that's why you weren't able to be there.
Yeah, man, I was cementing the fact that I was born in the wrong decade this past Saturday. You know, Strick, I know you gave it your all, and I can't really fault you. I feel like kind of a dick. I left you hanging, but you've done it before, so I kind of figured you'd be able to do it again. But, hey, you know what? No big deal. We, you can't win every one, you know? You gotta lose a few.
It'll be the last time we lose, but we always find new avenues and what have you, and just go kick the crap out of people other places. It's what we do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, so, but yeah, it's, this past Saturday was pretty decent for me. I got to, actually got to hang out with a buddy of mine that I was in the Army with for about 6 years. He rode up with me to the show, and I wrestled Sick Boy, who hadn't wrestled in probably over a year. Had a good match with him, and then was involved in the main event of WrestleForce, their War Games, which was myself, Jay Batista, Six, and Timber against the team of John Malice, Elodie, Axel Rotten, and Raven. And it was pretty sweet, man. I mean, it was a good show, good match, good crowd. Had a lot of fun, and I stayed in Columbia till about 4 o'clock in the morning, and then drove home from Columbia, and I got back home around 7:30 the following morning. And the whole time, all I could think was like, man, I was totally born in the wrong decade. But it was cool, man. Columbia is a different town. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's awesome. Like I really like it, and I kind of want to go back there a lot because the environment there, the people there, the after party was awesome. What was really funny is we were riding up to the show and we passed Gamecock Stadium, and my friend was like, "Ooh, are you wrestling there?" And I just laughed. I'm like, no, this isn't the 80s. I'm wrestling here, and it was a bar next to it, but it was still kind of fun.
Well, as soon as I get all the paperwork in line for my South Carolina wrestling license, then, yeah, you won't be riding up to those shows with only one worker in the car. But for
right
now,
on. Let's do it.
It's just a matter of getting the paperwork and all that good crap. So
yeah, it also would have been a lot cooler to have someone sober drive home.
Yeah.
So, Danny, what promotion was that?
That was Wrestle Force. They run. They were running quarterly, but apparently the booker wants to run. He wants to start running once a month, which I'd be cool with. In a good note, their show was they had a tournament for the first ever Wrestle Force heavyweight champion, which a good friend of mine, John Schuyler, actually ended up winning. So John Schuyler is your first ever first time inaugural world heavyweight, or not world. He's the Wrestle Force inaugural heavyweight champion.
Yeah, is he based up there? I know he wrestles a lot down here for UCW and I believe Anarchy and
Columbia.
Well, that's cool. Why did you say it made you feel like you were born in the wrong decade?
Because, man, like I read and hear all these stories about old heads and, you know, how they would wrestle in a town and then grab a case of beer and drive to the next town and, you know,
yeah.
they'd go to the show or the parties afterward and they'd be out till all hours of the night. And it just seems like today it's, you know, guys are, you know, all right, well, you guys have a good night. And then they go home and get ready for the next day. And it's just, I realized that was the kind of crowd that I heard. What the shit was that?
I don't know.
We still need
you're the one making noises like that.
No, that wasn't me, bro. That was telling a story. But, yeah, I realized that's the kind of environment that I would flourish slash completely crash and burn in, and it's just it's kind of sad. And you'll hear a lot later on when Ron Emi calls in, because I had an interview he did last week. But, Jesus Christ, shut up. Damn it.
Yeah, I'm out in public, so, yeah, give me a second. No, I'll stop making a question. Yeah, I know. Do you realize how totally I actually talk on the phone?
Anyway, hit mute so I can finish my story.
Okay,
but
go.
There it is. But, yeah, you'll hear Ron, because Nimi called into a show last week and was, you know, talking about his upcoming stuff, and he was just talking about how days, you know, how it used to be, and it's like, it's almost where the stuff you do now that gives you a bad reputation is what used to be a wrestler back in the day. You know, mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you should be in the back getting trashed and going out to your match drunk, and that's what a lot of people in, like, ECW and stuff like that did. That's not what I'm saying at all. But the lay of the land was you went out, you wrestled, you busted your ass, and then when you were done, you went out and you partied hard with everybody. And it almost seems like if you do that now, it's like you're frowned upon, and that's, I don't know, that's kind of sad. I mean, I'm not saying you have to do that to be cool. That's not it at all, but it's almost like if you do that, you're painted into this corner where you're some outcast, and that's garbage, because that used to be the lay of the land, you know?
Right.
If you can do it and handling it, then I don't see what the big deal is, but you're right. A lot of guys would give it a bad name because they couldn't handle themselves. Like you said, show up at the match bad and not have a good performance, and so they get labeled, and then every guy after them who's seen with a beer in his hand is thrown in the category of that guy.
Well, that's because models aren't wrestlers, and models can't handle them.
Columbia's got parts of it, which are a pretty rough town. Did they draw a pretty tough crowd, or was it more of a laid back?
Nah, the crowd was all right. The after party crowd was crazy, though. Holy shit, there were some animals there.
Yeah, Columbia don't play no games when it comes to really throwing down.
Now, don't get it wrong. There was a bunch of, like, fairies there, too. I mean, we were amazed about the number of guys in blazers and sports coats that totally shouldn't have been wearing them. You know, my friend went up there, and he's not a wrestler at all. And when he looks around at him, and he's like, dude, I could kick the shit out of half of this bar, then, yeah, there's something to be said. But
That's all right, man. It was fun, dude. Like I said, it was that's the most important thing. It was fun. We got to see a bouncer who looked like he was probably 17, kick the crap out of three people. So that was pretty neat. The Hate Junkies were not the only ones to lose a long title reign at TNT either. Zach Daniels lost his belt to the Jagged Edge in what was just what ended up being a destruction. It didn't start that way, but thanks to the interference of one Marty Freeman, Jagged Edge kind of got the upper hand over Zach and never let it go. As a matter of fact, it ended with Zach's wife coming in the ring throwing the towel in. So it was a rough night all around in Clayton.
Wow. Well, Porterdale was a lot of fun. It was not as big a crowd as the show that PCW did there on St. Patrick's Day, but it was still a good crowd, probably 70 or so people, and everyone was into it just like before, and there were some great matches. There was Supernatural almost took Shane Marks's Empire Wrestling title. Came pretty close, actually. And the other main event was Mason defending the Platinum Championship Wrestling title in a four-way against Johnny Danger, Mr. Eric, and I'm forgetting who else. But he won the match, so no titles changed hands there. But, of course, PCW has another show this Thursday at the Masquerade, and that's part of the reason why we have Strychnine on the show is because he is challenging Shane Marks for that same Empire title that Supernatural almost took. So, Shane, that's your first big title shot in PCW, as far as I know, or now Empire. So what are your thoughts on that match on Thursday?
Well, I'm real psyched for it because as much as I'm looking forward to beating his ass, Shane Marks is no doubt the best wrestler that most people have never heard of. And I'm not going to take anything away from the guy because I've been watching him, you know, watching him wrestle because I've been working here at a PCW thing. Me and Danny were at Sacred Ground 1 and then have been here or there, and Danny more so than myself. You know, I've been watching this guy and wanting to tangle with him, and he's a tough bastard, no doubt. But I'm looking forward to kicking the crap out of him. And it's going to be interesting taking the championship of a company that I am not a full-time member of their roster, but it'll be interesting, and looking forward to it because I gotta freaking bring my A game because that's the first of 3 days where I've got really big matches. So hopefully I'll be able to set the trend on Thursday night because Friday and Saturday I've been that matches as well. So
yeah, you've got you're defending your NWA Southern States title. Is that Friday or Saturday?
That's Friday against Shane Hexen, who, to his credit, he is one of three people this entire year that's beaten me, and that's it. So they freaking hit me with a driver and dropped me straight on my head, and my ears rang, and it sucked, and got to give him credit, even though he's a little prick, and I'm going to fucking beat him to death.
So that's at Alternative Pro Wrestling, and where is that, Royston?
Yep. That's Royston, Georgia. So NWA, Alternative Pro Wrestling, and that show starts at 8 way up in the hell of freaking North Georgia. Yay! And then Saturday, the Junkies take on 7 Casanova, 2-on-2, which is going to be fucking awesome. And
At Anarchy, right?
Yup.
If you're a fan of wrestling, and if you're a fan of four people just beating the living hell out of each other, I seriously recommend you camp to Anarchy this Saturday because the NWA Elite, you know, you got 7, the Deadly Sin, and Brian Casanova, who these two guys are no joke, man. They're both big, they're both mean, they're both strong, but they're not the Hate Junkies. So
no.
It's gonna be rough. I got a feeling it's gonna be really, really rough for me and Strychnine, but it's gonna be really, really rough for them too because we're not the typical cannon fodder they've been fed, and we're gonna beat the shit out of the two of them, and it's gonna be fun.
The crowd likes us now, but we're still not nice people. If you're those unfortunate bastards on the other side of the ring from us, And I do want to point out that Brian Casanova looks like if you somehow stuck Gomez Adams' head on Randy Orton's body. That makes me chuckle, and I feel like sharing it.
He does look like Gomez.
He does, mustache and all.
Now, have you given any consideration to when you face Shane Marks, you also know you're facing the Empire too? Are you, have you got anything in your bag of tricks to maybe even out the numbers game?
Yeah, he does. It's called the Damnation.
Yeah. See, I got a couple friends here and there. Wink, wink. On other post. got a couple. So I understand there's going to be a lot of jackholes because, Shane can hold his own, but if all else fails, he's going to, do what he does. And they are what they are. They're a freaking clique, and they try to look out for each other. But I'm going to do the absolute best I can to just cripple that guy before they have a chance. So.
And I guess you'll be dealing with Jesse Bailey as well for two nights out of the week, too.
Yeah. Which is something I've never done before. It's going to be interesting because I've seen that dude just fuck over the best of them.
He seems to be pretty good at that.
Yeah, it's what he does.
Well, you mentioned the you mentioned kind of vaguely the Damnation, which is Danny Only's group in PCW and Empire, and of course you guys are. Or have been the Hate Junkies for quite a while, and you've been part of other factions like the Devil's Rejects and things like that. So how do you guys work together? You know, you guys do separate shows a lot of times, and then you come back together pretty much every other weekend or so to work as a tag team. So how does that work for you guys?
I think it's the perfect avenue for us, because when we got together, we were the Junkies everywhere, all the time, and we really honed our craft as a team. And then there were a couple times here there where Danny was hurt, so I really got to get my chops up as a singles guy. But I think it's perfect that we have our time apart and we have our time together, because when we, the two of us collectively, get really good in the ring by ourselves, that means we're really, 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 really good together.
Right.
So.
You mentioned that in Anarchy the crowd has started to kind of like you, and the same thing happened in TNT and Clayton, and happened in PCW as well. But you never changed anything. I mean, you two have been the Hate Junkies every time I've seen you. You've done the same thing. You wrestle the same way. You take the same shortcuts if necessary. Is there something you think you can attribute sort of the crowd getting behind you to?
I can absolutely. I think when I first heard about it, when I first noticed it, now the first time the crowd at Anarchy started kind of coming around to us was when we lost the Hangman's match to the Urban Assault Squad. Because after Shadow and Nemesis left the building, me and Strychnine, who were both extremely bloody, beaten, and battered, stood up and we walked out. And when we did, the people started clapping, and it was just, I attribute that to real, recognizes real. I mean, it's like, it, at that point, there's heels, there's babies, there's good guys, there's bad guys, but at the core of it, the fans recognize people who go in there and who bust their ass, who go in there and do everything that they can. And it was the fact that me and Strychnine went out there and did everything that we could, and we left it all in there. We didn't take a day off. We didn't relax. We didn't leave anything to chance. Everything we had, we left in the ring every time we were there. And I think people started to recognize that, and they just started to appreciate it. And now it's the fact that they see us, and I think pretty much since the 80s, people have always liked a certain amount of the heels. And I'm not even going to say the cool heels, because we're not the cool heels. We just go out there and kick people's asses. So it's like people have always recognized the workhorses, the people who really put their asses out there. And that's what happened with us. I mean, we didn't change anything. We don't shake hands. We don't high-five people. We just do what we do, and people realize and recognize that, and they appreciate it. And they got behind us.
It still does weird me out just a little that the crowd will cheer now when I have somebody down and I stick my hand in my mouth like I'm going to throw up on them. That isn't, it still doesn't register why that gets, yeah, like that. And like, so we blow our noses on people and all that other crap and understand they like us, but I don't know, it's still a little weird. It is
pretty cool, and it does give me kind of a wrestling chub to know that the crowd went from only is the weak link to we want only. That's pretty crazy to me.
And some jackhole from the other team, do they just select some jackhole from the other team to decide they're the weak link for the evening?
Whoever we're facing, some dude from that team is now the weak link instead of only, because for a good year and a half in that building, you got to hear only is the weak link and Strychnine, Danny only's holding you back. Those are some pretty good chants. But
I've never figured that one out either.
But now they're fun. They're awesome.
It was fun to tear the head off the Barney doll and throw it at Bobby Moore, and Bobby Moore was the weak link for that evening.
Well, guys, again, as a tag team, a successful tag team, and as members of various different factions, those are both things that are in WWE especially, and to some degree in TNA and in the bigger companies. That's not the focus, and you guys also have worked with Reverend Dan Wilson as a manager, so those are all three things that are very old school. I guess they're still prevalent in some of the indies where you guys work, but how do you think that translates for people that may watch WWE and then come see an Anarchy show or a PCW show or whatever?
Well, I think it's shit that's missing, and
right.
I think a large part of it is because so few people could do it well. And what I mean is, all right, granted, there are so few people who can wrestle well. All right, but if the large majority of your wrestling product is singles wrestlers, if a lot of people suck at it, you're still going to have a lot of people that are good at it. Now, if a small number of that is good actual tag teams, and if an even smaller number of that is good managers, the crap that fills those ranks is going to seem like over-exaggerated, I guess. You know, I'm not doing a really good job of explaining this, but listen to what I'm saying. If your main environment is singles wrestlers, and if you got 100 singles wrestlers and 80 of them suck, you've got 20 that are really good. But out of that roster of 100 people, if you've only got 10 managers and 9 of them suck, you only have one good manager. And if you've got 17, 5 good. So I think the WWE and now TNA and a lot of the bigger organizations were looking at that, and this amateur wrestling and this tag team aspect of wrestling is already so small that when you have somebody that just goes in there and shits the bed, it automatically takes away from everything. So, I mean, think of how many managers you have in the Southeast, and, I mean, the ones that...
I think Danny went to another dimension or something.
Oh, it's not quite. I haven't moved. God damn it. Anyway, so what I'm saying is, so let's say in the Southeast, think of how many different managers you have, and I mean, think of how many, and I'm not going to name names because I don't want anybody to get pissed. I don't want anybody to say, why didn't you say me? But just think to yourself, how many there are, and how many are actually really, really, really good. And I don't mean good as an exceptional. I mean good as in could really do the deed on TV. And it's the same thing with tag team wrestling. How many tag teams do you have in the Southeast, and how many of them do you actually think could do the deed on the big screen?
I don't
know. So I think the big companies kind of got away from that because it was just the law of averages. It's singles wrestling, that's it. We don't need managers, we don't need valets, we don't need tag teams. What we need is guys that look like models, and then we need divas. And then that worked for a few years, and I think they're starting to realize that shit's getting old, and people want to know, where's the next Bobby Heenan? Where's the next Jim Cornette? Where's the next Stu? Where's the next Legion of Doom? Where's the next Rock and Roll Express? They want to see that.
My two cents to add to the tag team manager landscape as far as WWE versus the indies and what have you, I think, I do believe that there is a shift, and I see where you're saying, you know, the big leagues are noticing that the people want more of that stuff. But in the meantime, it kind of draws the casual wrestling fan in a lot of ways to things like the independents because it's something they do not see on their TV on Monday night.
Right.
And you just do not see that on Impact, Raw, SmackDown. And the professional wrestling industry is changing in some ways and staying the same in others. Like, if you think about some of the bigger, and by bigger, I mean, you know, the top guy stars in WWE, in a lot of ways, wrestlers are shrinking. And, you know, the fans are bored with seeing guys who are bulging with muscle but can't move. They want to watch guys like CM Punk and John Morrison and then Dolph Ziggler, who are, you know, not these super huge hulky guys, but they'll entertain the hell out of you because they go in there and bust ass. But,
right.
And the manager thing, sometimes, I'm not sure if WWE, the people they have in WWE who are potential managers, I think it's some of them don't exactly have the right idea as far as how to convey that story to that large of an audience. So, it's in the indies, it's easy, it's the manager can do his job, and it's, you know, everyone who's there can see, you know, what, you know, the referee's back was turned and he choked the guy. I mean, and like he'll start smack and, you know, jaw jack with the guy on in the front row, and in a smaller crowd that is more offensive than a crowd of umpteen thousand, and he's, you know, arguing with one person. So
right,
that's just my two cents on the whole dealio.
Well, there's nearly a generation of wrestling fans now that has never actually seen a male manager, a real one. Do you think that contributes to the fact that a lot of people now who are coming up and just starting maybe to go down that road don't exactly know how to do it?
Yeah. I mean, usually anybody's manager you see on WWE is playing the role of their girlfriend. Or, you know, the Vicky Guerrero thing where she's been married slash managers to all this other stuff. But it's they have to have some kind of strange reason why they're associated with them as opposed to just the guys of back in the 80s. This is an athlete. This man manages his affairs besides the ring and his general business operation. I don't know why. That's such a simple concept to grasp, but the people who put WWE, you know, who are the brains of it, I guess they might not think that translates quite right to their audience.
I think MVP had a, before he got called up, when he was still in Deep South Wrestling, I remember he had a guy whose name I don't remember now, but he's still involved in wrestling on the indie level, I believe, but he had an agent that kind of came out with him and they played it up. It was very much like an 80s style thing. Like he'd come out on his cell phone, you know, as if he was closing a deal for MVP or whatever right before the match. And I really wish when they brought MVP up that they had brought that guy with him. But I guess he got him. He got him on a SmackDown, and he served his purpose.
Hey, Strickland, where the fuck are you? Strickland live from a riot. He's live from a riot.
Either that, or he's like,
gathering?
Is he working? Is he washing dishes at a restaurant? No,
yeah,
he
is.
Juggler,
the water machine with landmines. They're starting. Abraham Washington seems to be putting together a stable, sort of on Raw and SmackDown both. So maybe they're entertaining the notion of going back down that road of having a male manager. But you know, we've seen so many start and stops with that television product that you can't really. I'll believe it when I see it more than anything else.
Well, like we talked about a lot last week and to some extent so far this week, it does seem like WWE's listening and willing to do what people are demanding rather than try to tell people what they want. So it seems like WrestleMania this year was really a turning point and leading up to WrestleMania too, but it seems like that was really where for some reason, a lot of stuff started to change, not just there, but in other companies too. So I've noticed that too. They've got Abraham Washington, and seems like there's a couple of other people. And of course, they've got John Laurinaitis. But that kind of, I think that whole, that type of manager, being like the manager of the show or the whole Vince McMahon owning the company, it seems like that may have also been part of the reason that other managers kind of ceased to exist, because it became, the focus became about this overall manager or authority figure that everyone was against in some way.
I was thoroughly impressed on Saturday with how Marty Freeman was able to help his charge sort of take advantage everywhere he could. I mean, the team was all over the place. Every time that Zach was sort of making the comeback and he was about to get Jagged Edge right where he wanted him, Marty would pop up and pull some trick off. And he pulled off this move where he just kind of hooked Zach with his cane around the throat and then just pulled him flat backwards on the floor. It was thoroughly impressive and utterly evil. And was kind of the turning point that they needed for Jagged Edge to finally get the win.
Yeah, well, he played a very similar role at the first PCW Porterdale show, because he pretty much managed anyone that was a heel because they came out with him. And it was mostly Empire guys, but for some reason they had other, you know, he was recruiting other people or whatever, but regardless of who was coming out with him, he definitely got involved in almost every match and had some kind of influence over the outcome of it. So Danny didn't want to name names, but I'd say Marty Freeman is definitely someone who has improved a lot since he first started managing, and someone who's definitely kind of bringing that role back locally.
I'm taking mental notes because this is the crap I'm going to have to look out for Thursday. So
yeah.
Crap.
Well, yeah, he's not, the thing with Empire is they've got like four managers. They've got Marty Freeman, Rachel Freeman. It's kind of like when Nemesis was on the show.
Oh, God. Laugh from the crime blotter.
Sorry. What the fuck is that beeping? That's not me.
So anyway, yeah, Empire's got...
The ambulance noise is me, but not the beeping.
Jeff G. Bailey, of course, is the overlord of that, but it seems like he's almost training these other guys and girl to become managers the way he's been for so long in the local scene. And nothing. Okay.
That happens.
It does.
There's an awkward silence, a gay baby's born. Fuck.
I think the police car kind of threw everyone off for a minute.
I was getting out front of the porch. I never take any chances on that because I thought it was here.
Yeah, so oddly enough, the police noise was me who figured.
Yeah.
What a shock.
So, Danny, tell us a little bit about our next guest, Hardcore Giant Ron Namey.
Well, he should be calling. He's a pretty punctual dude, so he should be calling here in about 5 to 7 minutes. So a brief history, so we don't have to waste dead space on that. We'll get him to actually get to the meat and potatoes of what he wants to call about. Ron Namey, the Hardcore Giant, a.k.a. the Human Tripod, was a promoter down in Florida for IPW, and I do not know what IPW stood for, but we can ask him.
I found out it's independent pro wrestling. Pretty simple.
There you go. That is why this is your show. But he was a promoter for IPW, which eventually became NWA Florida, and he was very influential in the development of a lot of really good talent. I'm not gonna venture to say who started with him. But I know around the IPW/NWA Florida times, who was there? You got names like the Shane Twins, a.k.a. the Gemini from WWE SmackDown.
Yeah.
names like the Marquis Bruce Santee, Eric Stevens, Steve Madison, Roderick and Cedric Strong, Rod Steele, Lex Lovett, other guys who had been around for a little bit but who did a lot around that time, the Cuban Assassin, Navy SEAL. He knew and still does know, I'd like to think, he knew talent. He knew who was good. He knew who wasn't good. And he knew what to do to put a product out that people wanted to see. And IPW, NWA Florida, was reaching its peak a few years before I started wrestling, and actually ended up closing a year or two before I started. And it was something that everyone in Florida wanted to be a part of, and anyone who knew anything about wrestling knew that that's where the top talent was. He put on a quality product, put on a quality show, and he went, you know, as far as you can without having, you know, bottomless pockets. I'm not even going to venture to guess how he kept it running. I don't know who did what, but he did really well with what he had, which to me is a testament, because it's one thing, you know, we talk about TNA and Impact Wrestling, and I'm not impressed with their product at all.
But
they have bottomless pockets, and as long as Panda Energy is signing their checks, they're not going to go out of business, because if they lose money, they're tax write-off. So
right. They're
not going anywhere anytime soon. It's something I talked – it might have been with you, Jonathan, I'm not sure, but I talked to somebody about how pissed I am when people who have little to no grasp of how wrestling should be run end up getting this ridiculous financial backing where they've got, like, obviously, they're trying to pass.
We're losing you again, Danny.
No, that's not me. Fucking, I'm telling you, I'm in the same place. Anyway.
Okay.
My phone's about to die, so I'm going to go ahead and sign off. So I got to go plug it up. Sorry. Bye.
Hey, I love you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for
calling. I won't hear any more random cop cars. See, bye.
All right, so you were saying, Danny?
Well, what I was saying is it really pisses me off is when you have people who have limited to zero understanding of how wrestling should be done, who seem to find these, in the wrestling world, we call them money marks, who will just pour ridiculous amounts of money into their pocket to keep this product going. And then when you have someone who really knows what needs to be done, i.e. Ron Neamey, who, whatever the situation is, I don't know why APW or NWA Florida had to shut down, but I can only imagine if they had somebody pouring money into their pocket, they'd still be open today, because he put on such quality product. And that's, you know, that's the kind of thing that's kind of sad today. It's the people who get the money are the people who don't deserve it. And the people who really deserve it tend to not get any.
Well, I believe we have Ron on the line now, so I'll let him, I don't know how much of that he heard, but let him respond to that if he'd like to.
Well, Danny's got me all pissed off now. I call here all happy, all ready to talk about wrestling, and he hits the nail right on the head. I shit you, man. I've been in the business since 91, and I was lucky enough to break in at the Tampa Sportatorium and really at the same time at Malenko School of Wrestling. I just hung around and, you know, did every single thing I could to get my foot in the door and got stretched and got my ass kicked week after week by the likes of, you know, Jimmy Backlund, later known as Jimmy Del Rey, Mark Starr, everybody that was hanging around. You know, I would set up a chair, I'd sell tickets, I'd sneak in the back door if they were being dicks that night. I did whatever I had to do to be around. And I really kind of started running shows with various people really not that long after being in the business, to the point that if I know somebody doing now what I tried to do then, I would just consider him an idiot and a mark who has no business whatsoever doing what he's doing. I was just lucky enough to meet the right people early on that I was able to pull it off. But like Danny said, to this day, I swear to God, if there's somebody who can't find a money mark and can't find sponsors and can't do whatever, I'm your fucking guy. I mean, it's when I run a show, we're counting on the merchandise, and we're counting on the tickets, and we're counting on, you know, all the revenue streams that you should be counting on to carry the promotion and to pay the talent and to pay the rent and the venue and the insurance and everything. But I think the main reason that I've never been able to really pull that end off is I've never really been a con man. I've never been the type that really would, you know, sell ourselves short to just get a few dollars off of some poor sap that didn't know any better. And the truth is most people that are deemed money marks are that for a reason. They're so gullible and they're so willing to take abuse and to be ripped off. If a guy like me was to come across them, I couldn't get a dime off them anyway because I wasn't going to bullshit them. I would shoot straight. I'd tell them what the deal was. I'd tell them what the product was all about. And I'd tell them where I thought things were going to go. And, you know, I didn't come in and tell them fucking Hulk Hogan was going to be headlining the next show. You know, we're going to be running in 50 different countries and pay-per-view and TV and the same old shit that everybody tells these guys. I'm not all about that. I've never been all about it. I've been putting out a hell of a product since I've been running shows, and I really base that on the talent that I bring in. And with the new Sunbelt wrestling that myself and Chris Lash are starting up, I really don't plan on changing that. The action in the ring and the talent in the ring is what's going to either make or break this promotion. And with what we've got going so far, I mean, we're a long way away from our first show. But as far as the venue and the production and the talent we've already got lined up, it's going to blow everything else out of the fucking water that's going on in Florida right now. Case closed.
Where is that going to be, in Daytona?
Yes, it's going to be at the Coca-Cola Pavilion at Destination Daytona, right off I-95 in Daytona. I mean, it's a sick-ass venue, and we've got these real cool guys that have come in and got on board Barbed Wire and Beer Productions, which they're the wrestling division of this company known as McGinnis Media Productions, based out of New Orleans. And, I mean, this isn't going to be your typical indie show setup. It's going to blow anything out there on the indie scene anywhere out of the water. And like I've said already, the talent in the ring is going to blow everybody away. I don't know if it's the type of show that if I was to put it in the ring up in the Northeast that, you know, these people would be going crazy. It's not your typical, I guess, what you would consider older Ring of Honor or current Dragon Gate or that type of promotion. I mean, I've always based what I run on, I don't know, I'd consider, you know, little mix of hardcore, little mix of old school, very southern based, even though I grew up in the Midwest. I like blood and guts. I like apologizing to the guy I'm going in the ring with before I go out there, because we are going to hit each other.
Yeah.
You know, and Danny knows that about me, and I'm a manager. I'm 5 foot nothing. But I, you know, I can go in there and bang with the best of them, and I can bump with the best of them. But that isn't my job. That's their job. But if there's a spot that I'm going to be involved with, you are going to get waffled. And when I get my receipt, I expect it to be, you know, just as stiff. And the people are sitting at an indie show. Christ, they might be 5 feet from the ring. You better be laying it in, and you better be making it count. Because these folks, they've paid their hard-earned money to come and buy a ticket and be entertained. They don't want to watch a bunch of pussies, and they're pretending to wrestle. They want to fight. They want to go home and say, God damn, these guys, this was the real deal. I don't know what you all see on TV, and I don't know what you've seen on indie shows you went to, but these guys were in there kicking each other's asses. You know, you got to go and see it. And any show or promotion I've been involved with, it always starts out good and grows and gets better from there. There's always roadblocks that are thrown in your way, being, you know, independent professional wrestling. It's brutal. It's cutthroat. It's the most political. You know, some of the biggest marks in the wrestling business are the wrestlers themselves. And I don't mean that for all of them, but Danny can attest some of the biggest roadblocks you'll ever run into trying to grow an indie promotion is the guys that are working for you. Their fear of success is just overwhelming at times. They'll cut their own, you know, they'll cut their own nose off to spite their face. It's the matter of getting the right guys on board, getting the right crew, getting the right staff, getting the right everybody involved. Shit, you got to get the right fans involved that care enough to go out there and you know, toot your horn and get people to come out and support what you're doing.
There was a time when hardcore wrestling was kind of, it was very hot for a little while, and then it kind of went away. Do you find it more difficult in this day to promote a hardcore show than you had maybe in the past?
My concept of hardcore has always been a little different, and I've always been very vocal about this. When I say hardcore, I don't really just think of, you know, taking a mousetrap and putting on somebody's lip, or taking hypodermic needles and shoving it through their skin, or staples, or this, or the other. While I personally like the crazy violence, I also consider hardcore. To me, the most hardcore stuff ever was Puerto Rico and Memphis. I mean, just typical blood and guts, badass guys out there beating each other up. You didn't have to be doing, you know, 450 shooting star presses off the top of, you know, some dome through a table that's on fire, you know, and barbed wire underneath it. If you want to do it and you can do it safely and not kill yourself on my show and there's a spot for it, that's cool. But I would personally rather go out there. I grew up on Bruiser Brody and Abdullah the Butcher and Jerry Blackwell and, you know, a lot of those guys that the current fans of hardcore might not think they would be what epitomize hardcore, but I to me, hardcore is just the blood, the guts, the passion more than anything. You know, you can go out there and not have any blood whatsoever, and, like, I don't think there's a Roderick Strong match I've ever seen that I didn't consider hardcore. What the guy's doing is fucking brutal. You know, it's wicked. He's not having to go through, you know, panes of glass to do that. But I think there's always going to be a fan base for very, very hard-hitting style. I personally think the blood is missing from WWE right now. A lot of the stories they try to tell, I have a hard time buying that a couple of guys hate each other that much, or they've got such a score to settle that, you know, there's no blood involved. I mean, I watched Taker and Triple H on WrestleMania, and Triple H was trying to get Hardway right from the get-go. You know, I mean, it was just obvious he, what was going on, and he obviously gets it a hell of a lot more than I do. But the truth is that match was incredible. The story was incredible. The brutality of it was ridiculous, but flat out, if there had been color involved, I think these guys would have looked like two guys that basically fought themselves to the death, and it would have added a lot. They probably didn't absolutely need it, but I personally think it would have added a lot. It would have added a lot of emotion. They don't need to overdo it. It doesn't need to be a bloodbath every other match like TNA tends to do from time to time. But I do think the violence is an aspect of wrestling that's missing right now in a major way. And I think a good part of the fans that have migrated to UFC or to mixed martial arts in general is the – it isn't just the reality of it, it's just the fact that the shit is violent. I mean, you get a lot of frustrations out watching these guys beat the piss out of each other. I don't care if it's 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever. You know that they're balls out the whole time, and they really care, and they can still, at the end of the match, shake each other's hands, and you're going, Jesus Christ, these guys just try to kill each other. That's how much it meant to them. You know, and I think that's hardcore. So I got a little bit different of a concept of what the term itself means. With Sunbelt Championship Wrestling, the one thing that I plan on bringing back in a major way is the tag team division. I've always been big on the tags. Breaking into the business, I manage a team known as the Southern Posse, Sonny T and Rick Dames, that ran throughout the Southeast for years, you know, just forever. I managed them for close to 7 years, I believe it was. And straight from them, I went into managing Mike and Todd Shane and managed them for several years. And I always really thought the tag division added a major part of the show, whether it was on the indies or in, you know, WWF, ECW, AWA, which I grew up on, and to this day in Japan. There's a lot of tag teams out there that are just basically begging for the exposure that they deserve. And, you know, we're not wasting any time. I went straight out and, you know, first two teams that I went and signed was the Dark City Fight Club. Everybody's aware of John Davis and Corey Chavis, you know, the NWA World Tag Champs. Made a huge noise in Ring of Honor. John is kicking ass in Dragon Gate USA. Corey's been around forever. He's, you know, I've known Corey since back in the day when he was up at NWA Wildside, and we were exchanging talent. IPW Hardcore and NWA Wildside was exchanging talent way back in the beginning with AJ and David Young and his partner, and Jimmy Rave and Blackout, which was Corey and his partner. And to go with that, I've also signed the Hate Junkies, who are now making their home up at NW Anarchy, which is basically the little brother of what NWA Wildside was. So, I mean, that's always been a strong tag team area. Florida's always been very strong in tag teams, and I'm gonna try to take the best of Georgia in Florida as far as my regulars that I'm gonna build around. But I'm also planning on bringing tag teams in from all over the country. You know, there's so much talent available. So, I mean, like I did with IPW, if they're willing to come in and they're willing to come in for a fair price and they're the type of people that I think could add to our show, I'll be bringing them in. And they'll be going against teams like Eight Junkies and Dark City because, you know, those guys right there deserve to be against the best and to prove why they're the best. And if they're not going to do it up in the Northeast or out on the West Coast, then I'll do it in Florida. And I'll show everybody I've got a lot of faith in Danny and his partner. And I've got a hell of a lot of faith in John and Corey. And, you know, there's some other teams out there. I plan on, if I can talk the Shane brothers into coming off the shelf and dusting them off a little bit and putting them out there. We've had a couple old school teams like the Headbangers have expressed interest. There's a team down here in Florida called the Brooklyn Shore. Former WWE Tough Enough guy Michael Zacky and his partner Eric Cooper. They're a hell of a tag team, and I plan on doing a lot with them. And there's a new tag out of the Jacksonville area known as the Undead, which is doing this kick-ass new zombie-type gimmick. And, you know, zombies are on fire right now, and I'm a big fan of both those guys as workers, and their gimmick looks just sick. I see them and the Hate Junkies being a really, really cool, entertaining, but heavy-hitting match. So I'm excited, as you can tell, because I haven't shut my trap for about 15 minutes now.
Well, Ron, we had a... Go ahead.
Wait, hold on. I was going to chime in real quick as soon as he got a break, and it was something Matt said about the difference between hardcore wrestling and what I think, and Ron touched on it, was just the terminology of it. When you ask your average person now what is hardcore wrestling, they talk about panes of glass, fucking light tubes, blah, 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 blah. But I think something that I always noticed with IPW Hardcore and NWA Florida was hardcore wrestling was just, it was a state of mind of what wrestling was. It was having a guy like, for instance, Bruce Santee and Vordell Walker go in there and just beat the hell out of each other for a good 10 to 12 minutes. Have a team at the time, Roderick and Cedric Strong against the Shane Twins, go in there and beat the living hell out of each other. Have two hardcore guys go in there and bleed buckets. And then at the end of the day, you know, holy shit, that was a really good show. And it was something for everyone. But the basis of the whole thing was hardcore, legitimate. We're giving you guys exactly what we want. And it's the same thing. The Hate Junkies have been in the ring with Dark City twice, and we've beat the living shit out of each other twice. And every time afterwards, we've been able to shake hands, go out, drink some beer afterwards, and be like, look, we kicked your ass, you kicked our ass, and we gave everybody what they wanted to see. And that, to me, at least to me, is just that's the difference between what the average person thinks hardcore is, because they get it confused a lot, I think, with deathmatch. And just hardcore, what Ron is trying to bring back is just that legitimate, we're not out here dancing and going through the moves. It's me and you, and we're going to beat the hell out of each other, and I'm going to try to win, and you're going to try to win. And at the end, I might spit in your face, I might shake your hand, but nothing's going to change from the match line.
I think that's a lost art. I really do. And you touched on some of the other guys. I've been pushing the tag situation, but, you know, I've already went out and, you know, basically got Vordell Walker, Cahagas, Bruce Santee, Jesse Neal, Francisco Chiazzo, you know, just to name a few of guys that are on board. I mean, just for this first show on October 27th, and I'm talking to some of the younger guys like Sam Shaw and Shooter Storm that are, you know, these are entertaining guys in and out of the ring, and they're as far as I'm concerned, they're the real deal. You know, I plan on building around the heavy hitters. There is going to be some entertainment aspect to the show that, you know, there are going to be kids that are going to be at the shows, and there's going to be women that are going to be at the shows, and they want entertainment, they want comedy, they want, you know, good-looking guys, they want whatever. But the entire show is going to be built around, like what you're talking about earlier, as far as I'm concerned, the hardcore aspect of going out there, and this is just blood, sweat, and tears, you know, and making this shit happen with a top-of-the-line production company behind it in a top-of-the-line facility. With, you know, again, it's just opportunity for everybody. It's an opportunity for us, the fans, the boys, everybody. I'm really excited about it.
And so what we described here is, you know, hardcore is just what I think of as wrestling. But, you know, when did we get to the point where we had to make a distinction that, you know, that hard-hitting style that most of us grew up watching is something else? I mean, sort of the entertainment and the comedy is now what everybody accepts as wrestling.
I think wrestling's always evolving. You know, it's going to continue to evolve. Right now, if you didn't have Linda McMahon involved in politics and all the other things that the family is involved in, I don't think we'd be having the PG-type TV right now by any means. And I'm not sure how long the WWE in its current form can continue to fund, you know, tens of millions of dollars of her playing politicians. So, you know, it's always going to evolve. It's eventually, I mean, Vince can't live forever, or maybe he can, who knows, but it's pretty obvious that when Triple H takes this thing over, you're going to see the wrestling side of things come back. And, you know, I'll give him credit where credit's due. The guy's obviously the master politician, but he's also been very responsible for, you know, the indie talent that's been getting snatched up and actually used, you know, while a lot of people bitch and complain about the way American Dragon's used and even the way Punk at times can be used, the truth is the guys are there, they're earning massive, massive paydays. You know, they're champions. If somebody had told me a couple years ago, or I guess 5 years ago, whatever, that the, you know, there'd be 2, 3, 4 Ring of Honor champions that would have jobs with the major groups and not only be getting pushed, but I mean, at one time you have, you know, Bryan Danielson and CM Punk both as, you know, the heavyweight and the world champions. I mean, I wouldn't, there's nobody that could have convinced me that was going to happen. And I personally love those guys. I'm a huge fan, but it just did not fit with what, you know, we've always presented the WWE as being. And, you know, you got Chris Hero is down there now, and Claudio, I can't even pronounce his name, Claudio Castagnoli. You've got Tyler Black. You've got all these guys that I don't think it would have been that long ago they would have got signed, you know?
Right. And Claudio actually appeared on SmackDown last Friday, which was pretty cool. He was just in the backstage segment, but.
And he's ultra talented, you know. I mean, he could be a major, major player if given a shot.
Yeah.
Here's a real funny story I heard about Claudio real quick. You know, everybody who's Husky Harris is, right? You know, big 300-plus-pound guy.
Mm-hmm.
I heard a story about in developmental where Husky was laying flat on his stomach on the mat, and Claudio grabbed him around his stomach and picked him up and a gut wrench up over his head. And that's just
wow.
Testament to how strong that dude is. Because, like, I know a lot of people who've been in the ring with Claudio, and every single one of them was like, he looks really tall and slender, but the dude is just retarded strong. And the fact that he deadlift picked up Husky Harris over his head is pretty damn impressive.
Well, and that'll probably get him a lot of respect in the dressing room up there. I mean, the guy is, you know, he's got model looks. He's got a, you know, ridiculously, like you were talking, he looks, I guess you could say almost looks thin, but so back in the day, so did Rick Rude. And I mean, that guy was chiseled out of stone. Claudio can cut a good promo, and he can work about 8 different styles in the ring. I mean, it's ridiculous. And he'll be as big of a star as they allow him to be. Like I said, they held Bryan Danielson down forever. Punk, they cut his legs out from underneath him about 100 times, and those guys just kept rising to the top because they're that good. But again, it didn't matter. It wasn't that long ago that just simply didn't matter. They did not sign guys off the indies, and it seems like there's more and more getting signed, and it's got to be, you know, due to the influence of Triple H, who at least understands and seems to respect the fact that the only place that anybody can really get to get experience anymore is either internationally or with, you know, with indies, you know, especially going through some of the major indies like Ring of Honor, of course. You know, I've never really been a diehard following everything from Ring of Honor from start to finish, but because of, you know, my friendship with Sal, who was a long-term DVD producer and distributor for those guys, I always had access to, you know, to DVDs and stuff, and I would always read online about these fabulous matches, and, you know, truthfully, whenever I watched them, I wasn't let down, and I feel that way about Dragon Gate and Dragon Gate USA now. I mean, that style isn't for everybody, but what they're doing blows me out of the water, and it's just insane cool. It's a new hype, you know, as far as I'm concerned, for this country, it's a hybrid form of wrestling. I don't know if it would ever catch on here, but it's cool that there's that many different versions of the same type of product, whether it's Lucha or Pierso or you know, the American version or even the European style. It's all in its own unique way, totally different, and it manages to be over after, you know, a century in all these different countries, and it's going to have its peaks, it's going to have its valleys. I don't think wrestling is anywhere near as popular right now as it was, you know, 20 years ago. But it's a hell of a lot more profitable than it's ever been because they got so many revenue streams. The problem is there's only one group that's profiting from it, and there's only one group of guys employed. You could count TNA, but other than a handful of guys in TNA, nobody's making any fucking money there. They got a million people watching TV every week, and they can't get 10,000 buys, and they can't draw 1,000 people. I guarantee you when we go to Daytona, I guarantee right now that we will outdraw any of the house shows that TNA runs in Florida. And for that matter, Georgia, I live here, and I went and saw them at the James Brown Arena. It was a fabulous show, and I could have been sitting at the fucking Armory, and it still wouldn't have been full if they'd have been running there. But the guys worked their asses off, and it was the guys that aren't getting paid worth a damn, while the guys that you see getting pushed on our throat on TV making hundreds of thousands of dollars, they're at home chilling out while these guys are the ones busting their ass in the ring. And the office is wondering why nobody's paying to come and see guys that we see either get squashed on TV, misused completely, or flat out not appear. Then they come to your town and you're supposed to shell out $15-$20 to go see a product of guys that have no exposure whatsoever. So I worked for TNA for about 6 months back in the day. I was lucky enough to work, you know, side by side with Jerry Jarrett running the gorilla position on the heel side at Universal, and it was a fabulous experience. And Jeff Jarrett was cool with me, and I the only reason I got in was because of Jimmy Hart. He pushed me down their throat until he finally gave me that spot. But other than working there for a short time, I've never been the greatest friends of theirs, and it's because I'm outspoken about what they do. And I have no problem telling anybody right now, we're just a shitty little indie trying to make a name for ourselves, and we're going to go in there and blow away anything that TNA is doing in Florida, period.
As well, it relates to TNA, Hulk Hogan just said that he thought that the problem they had, why they're not more over, is there was a money problem and that they weren't live. Now, I don't necessarily want you to speak on if you think that's the case. But my question is, what do you think causes a disconnect like that between what the fans seem to say that they want and what people inside the company perceive as the problem?
Well, it's one of those things that if the fans, especially when they've been based at the same studio there for so long, that when the fans react the way they want them to, or the way that they've trained them, like they're Pavlov's dog, you know, they're all of a sudden the best fans in the world. But when the fans don't react to something that just flat out isn't good or has been presented in a terrible way and they turn on it, it's like they take it personally, and how dare the fans tell us that we're wrong and fucking, hey, we decided this is the way we're turning Hulk Hogan for the 800th time, and we're supposed to forget every single storyline and rally behind him and get excited and whatever, and the fans have had enough of it. It to me, the fact that they, I hate to sound like your typical internet type of fan or guy in the business or whatever it is, you know, the anti Vince Russo deal. But the truth is how much more of a disconnect can you have when you've employed this guy basically from the start of the company up until recently? You know, he had a short time where he wasn't there. I would like to think that was more his choice than anything. But this guy has absolutely no connection whatsoever to the live audience. He still to this day is trumpeting and arguing and going crazy over quarter hours instead of buy rates and instead of the gate that the live shows. It's the quarter hour shit went out the door when the Monday Night Wars ended. I mean, it's wrestling. So even when wrestling was absolutely on fire, the people that were willing to advertise on the shows was a very I guess what most people would consider bottom feeder type. You didn't have Mercedes and Ford and, you know, Microsoft and take your pick of other things advertising on wrestling. It was the same old people that think for whatever reason that I guess 10 million, toothless trailer trash bums are the only people watching wrestling. So when you're getting a million viewers every single week, no matter what you put on there, and you're breaking down quarter hours, which, by the way, the quarter hours, Hulk and Bischoff and the other schmucks, their shit's in the toilet, while the same stuff with the girls and everything else seems to peak. But they're still trying to shift things around and take credit for anything that they even consider a glimmer of hope or success. I don't know. I mean, I've heard some of the figures that a couple of the guys have been offered recently that I guess would be your mid-card to... your mid-card guys, or your top younger talent of X Division, I guess, more than anything. Some of the money that they've been offered to re-up, and, I mean, it's insulting. I mean, it's cool that they have the opportunity to have a job, but if they're risking their lives and their necks and their asses the way they are every single week, and to be offered some chump change stuff while the same guys are getting half their salary paid by Spike, and then TNA ponies up the other half, and they either they can't or they won't wrestle half the time because they're either old and broken down, injured, or just flat out unwilling to play ball. I mean, how many more names can they have and not move the ratings or the buy rates or the live attendance and not figure out, you know what, we're 10 years into this, this shit ain't working. Maybe we should actually do what we've been saying we're going to do and build around these young guys. The funny thing is, though, is the young guys, if they were to start building around them, they ain't so goddamn young anymore either. I mean, you'd almost need a whole new crop. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's the guys, again, the AJ Styles types and the Christopher Daniels and the Frankie Kazarians and on, these guys have been around, guys, they've been around forever. This isn't like they could have started young and they wouldn't be young anymore. And the style they've been working, how long can they go if you were to start building around them? Now, it almost seems like they got to start back at square one, and I don't know if they'll ever be willing to do that. I'm not sure.
Well, it's funny that you say that because, like, I was talking to somebody who's got a lot of influence in Georgia wrestling, and we were just talking about how one of the biggest habits that it seemed for the longest time with the bigger companies, WWE, and then, you know, most recently TNA, was just the difference between now and then was they weren't willing to let something play out. It was like they were going to throw something out there, and if it wasn't an automatic hook on the first show, that they were going to yank them. And it just seemed, you know, they weren't willing to put in work to develop somebody. And that's, you know, when you talk about guys, you know, who got their leg chopped out from under them constantly but still rose to the top, for every one of those, there's another guy who I think who could have, if given just 6 months, which, you know, when you look at wrestling, I mean, how many people actually know how long John Cena's been John Cena that he is now? I mean, it's going on almost, what, 10 years?
Yeah, you're right. And yeah, a lot of these angles, though, and like you're talking about cutting legs out and letting stories play out and stuff, a lot of angles that take, you know, a show to complete might have been 3 months in the past. A really big story that's used to build up to a major event that would take a year before is now over in a month. You know, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Right, and that's I think that in combination, and it's, you know, we keep going back to this, and I think it's partly because of me and because I'm fucking stubborn and ignorant, but we had J.J. Dillon on the show talking about it, and we had Ron Simmons on the show talking about it, and I'd honestly like to get your feedback on it too, was back in the, let's say, mid-'80s to late-'80s to early-'90s, you had a character who came out, you know, you had a wrestler who was given a character, and this is what we want from it, and we want you to elaborate and to build on it. And that guy was given the ball to run with, and if he crashed and burned, then he crashed and burned. But if he did really, really great and just rose above, you had the opportunity to find your next, you know, in the early days, your next Ric Flair, your next Tully Blanchard, your next Dusty Rhodes, and in most recent times, your next Stone Cold, your next Rock, all the way up to your next CM Punk, your next Randy Orton. You know, when someone was given the ball and let the time and the effort to develop who they were actually able to rise above. Whereas now, it's when you're given a script, you're told what to say, what to do, and how to look, how to say it, how to smile. It almost seems to like eliminate the creativity of the wrestling product. That, on top of the fact that we're going to throw you on TV, and if they don't just bite on you, if your merchandise sales don't go up 200% next week, we're going to take you off TV. That seems like almost counterproductive, but it seems that especially over the past year, that they're kind of going against that. And with what you said, Ron, with Triple H having a lot more influence and realizing that, look, we can bring someone on TV and show them how to look, show them how to talk, show them how to act, but we're not going to be able to show them how to wrestle in a year. We need these guys who have this in them, you know, guys that have been wrestling 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years on the indies and busting their ass and putting the effort forward and who have already kind of developed their own character, so we can kind of tweak it for the copyright or whatever to keep it WWE. And the, like, the best example I could think is Dean Ambrose, John Moxley, for everybody who doesn't know. Moxley was amazing. He's one of the last people in the last 3 years on the indies who has just completely blown my mind, and now he's Dean Ambrose, but he's pretty much just John Moxley with a new name. So
yeah, he's awesome.
Think, yeah, what do you think is, I mean, obviously you said that Triple H is starting to notice that, you know, that they need to develop actual wrestling as opposed to just a character, and maybe build the character around the wrestling as opposed to building the wrestling around the character. What do you think as far as them giving guys like, look, this is what you're going to say, this is how you're going to say it, and just, you know, pre-producing this entire gimmick for somebody as opposed to just letting them do what they're good at?
They haven't really done that. I mean, shit, you could go back to what most people would consider the old days. I mean, the 80s, it was even more prepackaged. I mean, they were, I mean, these guys didn't even have names. Everybody was a big boss man or a Mountie or a model or a snake or whatever, you know. I mean, it was, everybody was a canned type deal. Now it's the opposite. If you cut their heads off, every goddamn guy looks like a guest model, and every girl, and I'm not complaining, but every girl looks like a huge titted Playboy, you know, girl, which is awesome, that part. I'm not complaining, obviously, but the part about the guys, I mean, you know, nobody's even got long hair. There's no big, fat, ugly, scary wrestlers. There's no, you know, there's no nothing. Everybody looks like I guess what you would just consider a perfect athlete or model. And it's like they're not given any chance to develop their personality. And again, how can I get over as a promo guy, if the shit you're giving me is written by, I swear to God, it's been about 10, 15 years that those guys in the back writing, I swear none of them have ever gotten laid. None of them have ever been a member of the football, basketball track. I'm not even sure they would have been cool enough to be on the fucking chess team. Because they're so, I mean, they give this material that just buries everybody comes across like just either a pussy or stupid or unfunny or take your pick of anything other than what people want to pay to see a wrestling guy be. I want to see a bunch of badass, you know, cool. If you're funny, I want you to be, you know, Chris Jericho back in the day when he was able to do his thing in WCW, ECW, all over the place was just amazing. No matter how much I love him right now, I sit there and watch that stuff with him and Punk, and I want to, you know, poke my eyes out, you know, and just slam my head against the wall because they're 15, 20 minute, basically poorly acted TV segments that these guys are reciting these scripts. And these are two guys that I'm fans of. You know, I'm a fan of these guys. If they are going to be given material that's supposed to be the top material and make it work and it stinks, I can't even imagine being any of the guys in the, you know, in the middle or on the bottom or just trying to break in. Like you brought up Dean Ambrose. I mean, we were the first to bring him to Florida, you know, when he came down the Jeff Peterson Memorial Cup and won it as John Moxley. You know, Sal and Gabe and those guys were really aware of what he was doing in CZW at the time. And I was aware of some of the crazy shit he was doing there. So I had no idea, you know, what this guy's deal was or what kind of talent he was. And he's as off the wall in person, I guess, or, you know, as a regular guy as he is in the ring. I mean, he sat and when I first met him, I was like 2 seconds into a conversation and he gave me like an hour dissertation on how everybody should be required to read the novel that Phil Jackson, the former, you know, Chicago Bulls and Lakers coach, wrote. And I mean, this went on for like an hour and I thought this guy was on acid or some shit like this. He's just fucking out there, man. I mean, I'm dead serious. And I'm thinking this has got to be the greatest rib ever because he won't stop. And every time I was around him, he was just totally offbeat, weirdo, crazy, off the ball, you know, off the wall wrestler type. And I was hooked from the get-go, you know, in and out of the ring. I'm like, this guy's, I mean, he's the real deal. He's a throwback to what a wrestler's supposed to be. He's unique. He's totally genuine and original and really talented in the ring. And, you know, he's just the kind of guy that flat out, I mean, the term's overused, but he just gets it. Gets what the whole deal is. He gets his own gimmick. He seems to live the gimmick, which I personally have no problem with. I like all the flaky weirdos in wrestling. I think that's missing too. You know, and he's somebody, if there's flaking, if there's weirdo, he may be at the top of the list of the ones I've met. But to me, that makes him even more of an attraction. You know, fans pick up on these guys when they're the real deal. You know,
well, there's something you said in a radio interview I heard before. And I was actually talking about it before you came on the show, and it almost seemed, especially on the indies, because it was like, okay, WWE went to a PG format, and the indies tried so hard to either A, follow that, or B, go distinctly against that, to where right. It was like, you were at an indie show, and you're a wrestler who, let's say you wrestled your match, and afterwards, you grabbed some beer, you were almost like, shunned for being this guy. And I heard you talk about the guys like the crowd that you missed, the ones that were the real wrestlers, the guys that, yeah, they went out, they busted their ass, and they worked hard, but when it was done, they played just as hard. And it's you read almost anybody's old biography about how wrestling used to be, and it's how these guys were. Coining the term, but they weren't underwear models who were like, oh, I got to shoot 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. They're like, hey guys, we're going to kick each other ass. And then when we're done, we're all going out to the bar, and we might not leave until we close the bar. And when we do, we're going to find another place to go. How much do you think that plays into just how wrestling is perceived by the fans? Whereas if you're a fan and you go to a show in, you know, Butthurt, Alabama, and then when you leave the venue, you go to your local watering hole and you see three of the guys there that you just saw kicking each other's asses in the bar or in the ring the night before, and then at the end of the night, the last thing you remember is security pulling three guys out that just got beat up by those same guys. How much of a legitimacy do you think that adds to wrestling in general?
Well, I think it adds a ton of it, but it's, you know, even more of the just, you know, I'm here to tell you, if I could play guitar or bass or actually sing, and I was, you know, living the dream of being in some hard rock or metal band, I can guarantee you that the show wouldn't be over and I'm going back and having a nice little latte and going back to the hotel. And, you know, I'm a rock star, for Christ's sake. You know, and being a wrestler is the same thing. They've done everything they can to clean up this image, and they have these guys, you know, a goddamn dress code, like they're, you know, like they're, I don't even, whatever dumb example you could come up with, you know, the dress code is, to me, asinine. I don't buy it. I don't think anybody sees wrestlers as any more professional or cleaned up with these rules and sanctions and image they're trying to put out. I believe that, unfortunately, the fans, or, you know what, I shouldn't say the fans, the general public and the media, especially the sports media, is always going to see wrestling and wrestlers as carny, you know, complete, however you want to put it, you know, not your, what they would consider your real athlete or your real entertainment. Well, you know what, if that's the way they think it, I would rather everybody be out there being the craziest asshole nutcase wrestlers on the face of the earth. No, I don't want you hurting nobody, and I don't want you killing nobody or, you know, mistreating anybody. But as far as coming to town and everybody knows that the wrestling troupe just came through town and you're raising hell and turning the place upside down and going home with all the hottest girls and, you know, doing what wrestlers do, I don't think Ric Flair would have been Ric Flair without that type of lifestyle and that type of reputation. I mean, Hulk Hogan, any of them, you know, you can, I think those guys were wrestlers just as much for those type of reasons as they were for the money. And, you know, it's the fame. The NFL guys are living more of a dirtbag lifestyle than wrestlers ever will from this point forward. It looks like the NBA makes us all look like choir boys. You know, it's the way it is. And Hollywood, as far as your so-called legitimate actors and entertainers, they're all off their rockers and nuts. It's like the wrestlers are the most well-behaved guys out there, and everybody thinks we're the pieces of shit. It don't make no sense to me. I don't get it.
Hey, guys, we've had a caller on hold for quite a while. It may just be someone listening, but I'm going to see if it's someone that might want to contribute or have questions.
All right.
Hello.
Better not.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, what's going on?
Who is this?
This is Drew from Lansing, Michigan, 2 hours away from Detroit. I actually agree with the one fellow that you got right there. You know, I'm not a wrestler or anything, but I've been watching it since, you know, back in the day when, you know, like you guys were talking about, when it was real, you know, it wasn't all this phony bullcrap. Let's say, for instance, where Vince McMahon became blown up in his vehicle. You know, you would have never saw that back in the day. And that's where all the real people, you know, all us real fans out there, that's what some of us want. We want that real stuff to come back. We don't want to see this fake stuff that happens because you can tell it's fake.
What you
like
might see
in the day,
instead of a limo being blown up is a referee actually being run over by an angry fan or something.
Yeah, you know, that's what made me lose my excitement, you know, for wrestling, you know, and I'm a UFC kind of guy, you know, I'm a kind of guy, if I could wrestle, I would rather go to UFC than sit there and watch this wrestling nowadays.
Well,
you know?
You know what, though, man? There is a lot of wrestling out there. All you're finding, unfortunately, if you're not looking, all you're going to find right now is WWE, maybe TNA. But even with the internet being the way it is right now, there's a lot of great wrestling out there. I mean, there's a lot of great indies.
Oh, yes.
You know, Mexico and Japan has fantastic stuff. And you're from Michigan. I'm from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, so I know you know your wrestling. Just go out there and find
it. Oh, yeah.
Man. Don't get bitter and don't get, you know, disenfranchised by it because,
you know,
wrestling is
I'm never going to get bitter, you know. It's just the fact, like you were just sitting there talking about, I miss that old-fashioned wrestling where you knew from at the end point, like you were talking about, you knew that they were going in there doing working from their hearts, not from a storyline. You knew right from the beginning that these guys were busting each other in the face. And now you obviously you can tell. And you know it's a storyline because they even tell you. But you know for a fact that's fake blood.
It is out there. You just got to go and find it, man. Like I said, you know, I got tired of the WWE for a long time, but now I got a little six-year-old boy who just loves it. I'm kind of thrilled watching again, whether I really like it or not. It's cool sitting there with my son. That's cool as hell.
Maybe for the young kids, you know, it might be cool, you know, but for the people, like I said, that's watched it since I've been a little kid, and, you know, I'm 27, 28, back, you know, when I was growing up, you when you were watching wrestling, you knew, okay, let's talk about Animal and Hawk. When they were on top of the power lines, or what was that? That scaffold match. That was real. That wasn't something that you sat there and said, "Oh, that's fake." When they fell from that was real.
And I want to take the wind out of your sails, brother. But go ahead and watch that match again. And the only thing on there that was worth a shit was Jim Cornette falling and breaking his leg. other than that, it was the Road Warriors and the Midnight Express clinging to that thing for dear life. They didn't want to do shit. They didn't move, and they were afraid. I remembered it the way you're explaining it, and then I went back and watched it, and it ain't quite how you remember, brother. It was fucking terrible.
Yeah.
It was four guys clinging to a metal sky, you know, sky thing up there. They didn't want nothing to do with it. Cornette didn't want to be up there. He was the only one willing to take a bump, and he ended up basically hanging as far as he could before falling and then still breaking his leg.
Yeah, I believe that happened.
By the way,
I believe that happened here in Atlanta.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, while we're on here, Michigan listener, May 12th and 13th, if you're really looking for really good wrestling, I don't know how far Michigan is from Cleveland, Ohio. It might be too far for you to go actually watch a show, but I'm sure you can look online and find out how to order it. But AIW, Absolute Intense Wrestling out of Cleveland, is actually doing a two-day tournament, the JT Lightning Memorial Tournament, and it is going to feature some of the top indie stars today. Johnny Gargano is on there, Colt Cabana, Brian Kendrick, ACH, who ACH is, for anyone who does not know who ACH is, you seriously need to look this dude up, because he's amazing.
Yeah.
But go check it out. I mean, even if, just go to Google, type in AIW Wrestling, and you'll be able to find it. And for a small piece of wrestling trivia, there's two parts to this. Who was it that caught Jim Cornette when he fell from the scaffold? And who was it that was supposed to catch Jim Cornette when he fell from the scaffold?
You sound like Jim Holbrook.
I'm guessing Big Bubba Rogers had to have been one of them.
It was. Big Bubba Rogers, a.k.a. Big Boss Man Ray Traylor, was the one that semi-caught Jim Cornette and caused him to break both his legs. But for those Georgia wrestling fans who want to listen, the guy that was supposed to be there, and there was a travel/money/contract dispute that caused it to not happen, but NWA Anarchy's own Brody Ray Chase was actually supposed to be in that role.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I did not know that. You know, the guy that just called, is he still on the line, the fan from Michigan?
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you or Danny might be able to tell him some particular promotions up in his area to look out for.
In Michigan, there's just, I grew up in Upper Michigan and we didn't have shit. But Lower Michigan to this day, I mean, that's where Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin and with Illinois and everything, you had Punk and Cabana and those guys. There's really just an ass load of them, man. Just type in on anywhere, Google or Yahoo, whatever, just type in Michigan Independent Wrestling. And for whatever reason, not only is there a lot of promotions up there, there's a lot of really, really sick-ass, legitimate name indie talent. And I'm guaranteeing you there's a show not far from where you're at. And, not telling you what to do, but myself, when I'm a fan of something, whether it's rock and roll or wrestling or movies or whatever, if I really, really like something, I'm going to go wherever I got to go to support it and make sure that it still exists in that form. You know, it's just the way it is. And the indie scene needs it. The music scene needs it. Every form of entertainment, that it's funny because the more access we have to stuff right now, it almost seems like it gives people more of a reason to not fucking go out and buy a ticket and you know, to see some live entertainment and to give these type of acts a shot and to be, you know, seen in front of an actual audience. Like I said, I could go on forever. I mean, Dave Prazak's still up in that neck of the woods, and you know, yeah, as Shimmer, if you like women's wrestling, and there's a million of them. Christ, ICP even runs their crazy independent shows up there in Michigan.
Oh, yeah, and Truth Martini's House
yep.
of Truth training school
yes.
is in Detroit or Lansing or somewhere in that area.
Yeah, there's a ton of them.
Yep.
Hey, Drew, I have a question for you. You said your name's Drew, right?
Yes. Yes, sir, it is.
So Raw, WWE Raw was in Detroit last night. Did you go?
No, I wasn't able to. We actually, because I got a group of myself that we actually put back into the community. We had a fire or whatever 2 weeks ago. And there has been a big explosions up here. And we also had a gas leak. So we've been dealing with other things right now than me going to shows or whatever. I've been really wanting to. But like I said, I've been dealing with this stuff up here about our house and trailer and stuff, you know, trying to get back to the community right now.
You got gas leaks and explosions and shit. I highly recommend if you're a smoker to stop immediately. Because this ends fucking terribly otherwise. We're never going to hear from you again.
Yeah, well, it wasn't because of someone smoking. Someone actually set these sheds on fire. You know, we were all sleeping at 5 o'clock in the morning, and someone set them on fire, so.
Jesus Christ,
they didn't set them on fire.
What kind of madness you got going on up there? The only time we usually burn the city to the ground in Detroit is if we win the world championship in baseball or basketball. We know it's never happened.
You know, you know how Michigan is. You know, we're not about that racism or anything. And
no,
we're getting
just
a lot of them Nazi
fired.
Groups. You know, we're getting a lot of them Nazi groups back up here, and it's getting pretty horrible up here.
All right,
just put a damper on my happy Michigan. My reminiscing about Michigan fantasy just went down the goddamn tubes with you and your Nazi and your class and all this other crazy shit. What's wrong with you?
Oh, thanks.
Well, Drew, I want to thank you for calling and for listening. And Ron,
oh, you are.
I I have a few more questions for you, but we have to take a quick commercial break. So if you don't mind hanging on for a few more minutes,
Ivan,
we'll be back. Okay, just a minute.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling at the Academy Theater in Avondale State. We're also at the Masquerade every month or so. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Champions of Wrestling, and you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to our special Tuesday. Yay!
Hey, I got to get a plug in just now. This is actually the first time that I've been able to listen to your spots that you guys run. I just heard my lawyer, Jody Peterman, advertising on your show. And if anybody, being straight up, not bullshitting, no rib whatsoever, if you ever need to get off on an assault and battery on Johnny Fairplay from Survivor, I highly recommend hiring Jody Peterman, because I did. If you ever need to get off on an assault and battery charge from the business owner next to your business that you run, go ahead and hire Jody Peterman, because I did. Jody has got me out of more shit in Florida and Georgia than any lawyer could possibly have ever done. Me and Frankie Capone, or Francisco Chiazza, whatever gimmick he's going by currently, Jody is the most awesome lawyer and just kicks the ass of these judges every single time. It's cool. I didn't know he advertised with you guys. He is the man.
All right. Well, again, welcome back to Georgia Wrestling Now. Our guest is Ron Nemi, and there are some other mentions in that ad that I have a few questions I want to ask you, but one was you were here in the Atlanta area in Georgia a few months ago, and I know you were part of PCW/Empire, and I think you may have done a few other shows while you're here, but what were your thoughts, or what are your thoughts on some of the current local indie promotions in Georgia, and how do they compare to what you see in Florida?
Georgia is one of those deals like Florida. For every really good promotion, there's several more that you wish didn't exist, because they do as good of a job killing the indie scene as anything else that, you know, could possibly hurt it. There's, you know, I came up and did Empire or Platinum, whatever it's referred to now, and I had a lot of fun. The venue was really cool. It's extremely small,
yeah.
But the people that are in there are really, really vocal, and they're into their characters that they're used to seeing, and they were very respectful and cool with you know, folks that were new to the area. Like I managed Cahagas against Fordell Walker there, I believe,
right.
And we had a really good time. It was fun. Some of the over the top comedy stuff to me, I don't know. I guess I'm a little more guyish, and some of the comedy seemed really lame to me. It didn't seem like it would get over. Like if it was in front of a, I guess what you'd call a smark, you know, type audience, it would have just bombed epic proportions. But the people there liked it. So obviously the booker and the promoter and the talent know the fans they're in front of and what they want to see, because some of the stuff I watched that I thought was just atrocious was probably some of the most over stuff on the show. So, you know, what do I know? It's different at every type of promotion venue and show itself. It was really cool because I got to see Danny there. I got to see my old buddy Jeff G. Bailey, which, I mean, I've known, me and him have been around far too long. And we're just bitter old crusty, you know, shitty manager guys now. And Danny will tell you in the back, there was no gruffer, meaner, but happy to, you know, give advice and help out guys and me and Jeff. You know, we've both seen it all and have done it all. And it was cool to be there and work with him. I haven't been back since. I'm not sure they like my stuff. I do present myself a little different when it comes to these shows. And again, I'm only a manager, but I don't mind telling anybody I walk in on most shows and walk in like I own the place. And I want to do what if somebody's going to tell us we're doing something and I get to the show and it's changed and it's something that's obviously ridiculous and it's not going to get over. I just as soon not get dressed and, you know, sit behind the bar and drink whatever alcohol they're serving and watch the boys work. I didn't have that type of experience there. But I also wasn't, I guess, drinking the Kool-Aid as much as if I was somebody that counted on it every single week. Stephen Platinum is a very, I would say he's eccentric. He's very unique. He's very different. He believes in what he's doing like nothing I've seen in a long, long time. And the local guys that are counting on him to make something happen are buying what he's selling, hook, line, and sinker. I think it's cool. I have no problem with what he's doing. I think if it was presented outside of that immediate area, if the same type of product was presented, I don't feel it would get over outside of that fan base. But on the flip side, for all the goofiness, there was also the promotion that brings in Danny, brings in Vordell, brings in Cahagas, has brought in Davey Richards a few times. They had some talent there that was really, really good. I guess it'd just be your typical indie. Maybe I paid more attention that night than I normally do, but nothing really blew me away outside of the outside talent that came in. And, you know, obviously you can't be building around the outside talent. You got to be building on your guys. The thing I will give them credit for, though, is I see on the internet just off of headlines that they've followed through with. I believe that angle pretty much started that night that I was there. And Danny, I don't know if you're still involved with it or not, but I think the angle is still going strong to this point, and I'll give them all the credit in the world. I mean, if they've decided they're going to do something, they're doing it, and they're going all the way through, and it seems to be working. What do you, Danny? Are you still involved with that promotion and that angle?
Yeah, I'm still there, and actually, if I'm not mistaken, the time you were there, I was still a member of the Empire, who ended up kind of doing the usurping of PCW and taking over.
Right.
And since then, I've kind of split off and made my own little de facto group of people who just don't want to put up with the bullshit. But
okay.
I will definitely agree with you on that. I mean, I've said this about Steve and about Platinum for as long as I can remember. It's different. It's not bad. It's not tremendous. It's different. But go against that, there are some guys there who are really, really, really good. I mean, guys,
yeah,
like, you know, Strick talked about him earlier, Shane Marks is the best wrestler you've never heard of, hands down.
Right.
So he's done a lot with nothing to start out with, and he's been able to take and build upon that because he's had his core that he came up with. And he's been able to develop them and build them into something that, like you said, it's something different. It's not
it's very weird. It's almost art. It's almost like this. I don't know. I came up under a different type. Well, yeah, I don't want to keep saying Florida because you're up with the old Wildside crew, and those guys are very reminiscent of what I came. When I'm talking to them, I mean Iceberg, David Young, those guys that brought up the guys that you're with now. They did
right.
Everything very, very old school and bare bones and again, badass, mean. You know, these guys aren't the type you'd find in a poetry class. Stephen Platinum and his type that are, he's got his core people, whatever, that I get it. It could be just as much a play that they're doing as it is a wrestling deal. He's very artsy, very eccentric. And I don't mean that as an insult. That's the opposite of me. But it's obviously got some type of place there, and he could be a performance artist, I think, just as much as he could be a wrestling guy. I don't think that it would fly in the majority of the places that I've been, but it's his promotion. He seems to be succeeding and has guys willing to make things happen. And, you know, I mentioned Danny and I mentioned Jeff, but I also got to see an old friend of mine, Jay Fury, there, who I used Jay. Christ, years and years ago, Jay was a regular for mine down in Florida. He would team with Jarrell Clark, and he would do some single stuff, and Jay was doing the same crazy, amazing shit up there for Empire Platinum. He was doing the same insane stuff for them as I remember him doing in Florida. So, you know, it's one of those things, if they're listening, you know, I'll give them a thumbs up. It's their deal is definitely not everybody's cup of tea, but if you're just a bare-bones, back to basics wrestling fan, if you're willing to sit through some of the really off the wall stuff like Princess Leia running around shooting somebody with a squirt gun, which I wish I was bullshitting, but I mean that actually happened that night.
No,
if
we were all there.
You were there too. Yeah, I mean just crazy stuff. You know, if that happened on a lot of shows, I'm you know shooting straight with you, there would have been a portion of the crowd would have just gone up and laughed. I mean, they would have been like, what is this? But then you would also have missed some really, really good wrestling. Again, you take the good with the bad, and the fans there seem, it's almost like the way I told my wife when I got home, to me it was like going to a wrestling version of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. The fans were all in on the joke, man. They were all in on it. So for me to sit there and be old school fucking, that's not wrestling, you know what, then I don't get it, and I'm an asshole. Because they got it, they liked it, and they're still going to the shows, and while they're there, I'm not. So what the fuck do I know?
Yeah, and if I can add two things to that. One, Princess Leia is ungodly hot. And Steve definitely does that. He doesn't fucking dance around, and he definitely does not half-ass. When he sees something and when he knows how it's going to go, he's one of these dudes who can, like we were talking about earlier, he can put together a one-year storyline that will keep you there and interested for 1 year. It's just like you said, Ron, if you can get by, you know, Princess Leia dance around half-naked, thank God. But half naked with a squirt gun, then if you can get past that, and it's the same thing. It's not everything for everybody. It's a little bit of something for everybody. But if you can sit back and be like, all right, this isn't necessarily me, but the next match is going to be Shane Marks and Strychnine, or the next match is going to be Danny Only and Davey Richards, or the next match is going to be Kyle Matthews and Davey Richards, you know, then you know that you can come back week after week after week, and he's not going to shortchange anything. And the story and the development is definitely going to be there because he's got, you know, he's definitely got his head in it. So it's one place that is my number two place in the state of Georgia. My number one place that I've always wanted to be at was NWA Anarchy. I've wanted to be there since the first time I ever fucking strapped on a pair of boots. My number two place, hands down, is Platinum. And fuck anybody who doesn't like it, because I don't care.
I worked for this smaller group in Augusta on Saturday called the Augusta Wrestling Alliance, and you know, I don't like when they regionalize themselves that narrow, but you know, just calling it the AWA, you know, it is what it is. It's cool. Same thing though. You know, they had this. A.R. Fox is there, Anthony Henry's there, Chip Day's there, Corey Hollis, Brandon Parker, Darkness, who I like. I mean, they had some really cool talent there. This place, it was in this tiny little club in Augusta called Alter Egos, and, you know, it was what it was. I mean, the match I was involved with did not go the way I expected it to. The guy that I was managing against shows up with street clothes, and I'm an asshole and a prima donna, and I ended up basically throwing a tantrum and walking out of my own match because of how unprofessional I felt it was. If I'd have been paying more attention, I guess, in the back, I would have known that this idiot wasn't in his gear yet, and I would never have walked out. Like I said, I'd rather just sit back and had a few beers and let them go out there and play wrestler or whatever. But, you know, it upset me. Not only that it was presented that way, but what upset me even more is that the rest of the show, the guys had worked so hard and presented a wrestling show, no matter how tiny the venue was or how small the crowd was or whatever. It had, you know, AR Fox has been all over the place with Japan and, you know, with Evolve and Dragon Gate USA and all throughout the indies. And you know, you got Sugar Dunkerton is in the back helping run things. You've got, I mean, these are legitimate talents. Chip Day's been around forever. This Anthony Henry kid, I'm starting to hear more and more and more about. Bordell was supposed to be there but couldn't make it, you know, due to some personal stuff with the promoter. But, again, it was what could have been a great show that had a couple things that didn't thrill me. But if you come and see one of my shows, there's probably going to be a couple things that don't thrill you guys. But, you know, there is some real shit going on out there, and there's some real talent. And it's just good that there's starting to be more places for them to showcase that talent.
Is there going to be beer right. at Sun?
What's that?
Is there going to be beer at Sunbelt?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Budweiser's one of the sponsors.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, we only have a few minutes left, and I wanted to ask real quick. A few years back, you were, Ron, you were part of Deep South Wrestling, which was a WWE developmental, and you've talked a lot about, you know, Triple H and how he's bringing up developmental and indie guys, and you mentioned the Shane Twins who were in Deep South before they made it to SmackDown and stuff. So what was your role there, and what was it like working there, and why are you no longer working with WWE?
Well, really, when the Shane brothers weren't there but a week, and they had given my tape to Bill DeMott, and Bill had invited me to come up there and meet him and talk with him and Jody, and I went up there. I was driving from Tampa, which was a, you know, good 8-hour hike, and I was still working a regular job and being dad and all this other, you know, insanity and trying to make the schedule work. I went up there. Bill liked what he seen, and he asked me to come up there, and it was funny because they call them dark matches, but there wasn't any TV for the longest time with Deep South, if you guys remember.
Right.
It was taped.
Yeah.
It was taped, but it wasn't being seen anywhere except for where it needed to be seen, and that was up with the people evaluating talent up at, you know, up in Connecticut. And I was doing the dark matches most of the time with Stryker. A lot of times I did it with Nigel Sherrod. And then other times they'd have people sit in, but most of the time it was either me and Stryker or me and Nigel. And for whatever reason, Jody just would not pull me up to the main deal. He was really high on Nigel, and then Bill DeMott was Nigel's color guy. And they did this big angle where Bill ended up getting involved with the Shane brothers, and it was leading to a feud, and that got Bill out of the booth and put me in there with Nigel. And I thought it worked really well. Everybody thought it worked real well. The guys liked it, and Jody basically ixnayed and shit all over it and pretty much killed the Shane brothers, you know, and Bill's angle dead to get Bill back into the commentary deal as soon as he said that. I'd been up there quite a few months at that point, but as soon as that happened, the writing was on the wall, and I thanked Bill for everything he did and, you know, shook Jody's hand and said, thanks, I won't be back. You know,
got hit with the VCR?
Yeah, it was this fucking killer angle, man. I mean, it was great.
Yeah, I remember that.
The crowd was hot about it, and everything was cool, but, you know, it wasn't an angle revolving around the assassin, so, you know, God forbid that get over, so that was fucking killed dead. You know, everybody knows that everybody wants to see an 80-year-old fucking tub of shit walking around with a yellow mask, you know, pulled over his head. They don't want to see actual talent. So, you know, that was killed dead, and I quit and went home and, you know, took my ball and went home and, you know, I ain't going to lie to you guys, man. I like doing what I do, and I've paid my dues forever, and I'd pay them again if it was to get me an opportunity. But I've earned everything that I've done in this business, and I'll fight tooth and nail, and I'm fiercely loyal. But some of the bitter old fucks that manage to hang around the business, unless it's about them, they will do everything they can to make it about them. And once that doesn't work, they'll just basically throw up their hands and give up, and we're all left to fucking, you know, flounder and wonder what's going on next. So that's probably your entire history of Deep South in a capsule. You know, these guys they didn't have no goddamn spot shows. They didn't have no TV until there was a gun put to his head and he was told he had to run TV. And then basically all of that shit went down the tubes and didn't work, and nobody was, you know, making any progress. And they pulled the plug on him. He sued him, and I think he got a nice settlement. So, you know, who's the idiot? Me, sitting here doing an internet radio show, or the old retired mask man sitting on a pile of fucking money? I showed them.
I got one before you, Ron. You did. You got a big history in Florida and Georgia, and I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna put you on the spot, man. Either
we got about 5 minutes, just so you know, Danny.
Hey, all I need is one more minute. Inactive, active. If you had to pick your top five people who would be on a show, if you could book anybody in Florida. Around the time you were around, inactive or active today, who would be your top five guys that you would put on a show?
Out of Florida or outside of Florida?
Guys that you came up with in Florida.
Mike Sullivan, either if he was working as Mike Sullivan or Freedom Rider, was just a fantastic babyface, great singles wrestler, great tag wrestler, great heel when I wanted him as a heel. I mean, he was just overall just a great talent. He looked like a wrestler, and then behind the scenes, the guy was just a fucking class act. I mean, he still is. He's a fire rescue guy down in St. Petersburg, Florida. Great family man, still in great shape, still laces him up from time to time and makes things happen. Jeff Bradley, who was the original Dudley, fantastic talent, trained by the Malenkos, trained by Hiro Matsuda, was in charge of the training at Malenko School of Wrestling when talents like Tony Mamaluk, Chad Collier, Jaguar, the Shane brothers, Jeremy Lopez, Jamie Noble was there a little bit at that time. All those talents came out underneath Jeff Bradley, and he was one of the biggest, baddest, ugliest, craziest fuckers you'll ever meet. I mean, he was like a Bruiser Brody, you know, after Bruiser Brody was gone. And due to being an insane, completely unstable person, he never really made it in WWE or WCW. He had a million shots, but he's a nutcase, but he was always awesome to have around because that kind of energy and craziness kind of played out in the ring. Scoot Andrews, Black Nature Boy Scoot Andrews, ultra talented, same thing, versatile as far as really good looking guy, really jacked up guy, very professional and educated outside of the ring, family man as well, extremely successful away from wrestling, but when he was in the ring or if he was helping promote a show, this guy was an A-lister, you know, from top to bottom. Jet Jaguar was the first cruiserweight that I really made my project. You know, Jet was I always say he was the biggest little man that I ever worked with. I mean, he was just an animal to get in the ring with and worked extremely snug. If you were in the ring with him, you knew you'd been in the ring with him. And he was one of the first ones that got signed when they were doing their snatching up of trying to build up the cruiserweight division in WCW when Jet, Mamaluk, Noble, Lopez, Collier, and about a million other cruisers were all signed up underneath, you know, Canyon, who went through Dean Malenko. And the Shane brothers. I still, to this day, don't know how the Shane brothers didn't make it. You know, they made it to SmackDown, and then, you know, an injury. Pretty much, they were already old for the, you know, for the time frame most guys are brought in as. They started late in the business, and when they finally got their opportunity, you know, Todd ended up blowing out his try. And by the time it's time to come up, you know, come back, that they would be pretty much given up on them. But I always tell the Shane brothers, they missed their window. If they had come in the 80s, you know, with their size, and then, of course, with their ability, because they were the size of the Road Warriors and the size of guys like Warlord and Barbarian and Snap, of the shit they could do in the ring was the type of stuff that Dean and Chris and Eddie and all these other guys, that's who they learned from. And I don't think people have really not seen them like I've seen them. They don't really understand or appreciate just how talented those guys were. To this day, I mean, if they were willing to get off the shelf and dust off the boots and the trunks, I could build a ridiculous indie promotion around those guys.
Right on.
All right, well, we are completely out of time at this point, so I want to thank Ron for calling in. And earlier in the show, we had Strict 9. Next week, we will have the new TNT Pro Wrestling Champion, The Jagged Edge, and Marty Freeman, and probably another guest. But until then, we will see you at several wrestling shows this week. I should clarify, UCW show on Friday was postponed, but they are still doing their show Saturday at the North Atlanta Trade Center. And, of course, there's Empire at Masquerade on Thursday and at Academy Theater on Friday. And lots of shows on Saturday, NWA Anarchy, NWA Action. Yes, so anyway, we're out of time, and we'll be back next Monday.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.